Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Story Within The Story. I am your host, Alfonso Scott. Christian, are you on the line with me? Today we are looking at wrongful convictions within the state of Louisiana. Today we are focusing our attention on a man by the name of Glenn Ford. Glenn Ford was given a death sentence for a crime that he did not commit. He was he did about 30 plus years in Louisiana State Penitentiary. And if it had not been for the Innocent Project, Glenn Ford might not be a free man today. And I think I have his attorney on the line finally.
You do.
Okay. Kristen?
Yes.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Listen, first of all, let me say thank you so much for accepting our invitation to come on today's show.
My pleasure.
And I remember this case, but about a week ago I was reading Shreveport Times, and it made front page, you know, that he was a Louisiana longest-serving death row inmate. He did 30-plus years behind bars for a crime that he did not commit.
Yes.
And you are with the Innocent Project, correct?
I work at Innocence Project New Orleans. Mr. Ford was represented by the Capital Post-Conviction Project of Louisiana while he was on death row, and they are the organization that represented him and had him work to have him freed and fought his execution for 30 years or nearly. Our office came on and volunteered to represent him on his application for compensation for wrongful conviction and incarceration. And that's how we got involved in his case.
Okay, so before we get off into how he got arrested, tell me a little bit about the Innocent Project and how do you all go about deciding which case that you're going to look into.
Sure. We are a nonprofit law office that represents people who are serving life sentences and who are innocent of those crimes. We represent people in Louisiana and southern Mississippi. We don't represent people on death row because those people have a right to an attorney. So they have someone arguing for them. And if they're innocent, they have someone to make that argument for them. However, those people who are sentenced to life without parole, which in Louisiana means you die in prison, once your direct appeal is complete and you're in the post-conviction stage, you no longer have the right to an attorney. Now, in theory, you could hire one, but, you know, when you're earning 4 cents an hour working in the field, you don't have any money to hire an attorney. So we've come in to represent those who are innocent and have claims of factual innocence.
Okay. Now, with Glenn Ford's case, he has since been released from prison, right?
Yes. Just over a year ago, he walked out of prison.
Okay, so I think last Wednesday, it's 1 year anniversary, I think.
I think so. It was the 11th of March.
Okay, so now, he was accused of committing a robbery and a murder in Shreveport, Louisiana. It was back in 1983, I think.
Yes.
Okay, so what happened there? What was the case?
Well, Mr. Ford knew the victim. He had worked for him previously, and on the day that he was murdered earlier that day, Mr. Ford had been by the store where the victim worked. He initially came under the eye of police because a neighbor said that they had seen him by the victim's store on the day he was killed. So they brought him in, and he answered their questions, and he explained that he wasn't there at that time. He had been there before, you know, he was murdered, and that was it. It wasn't until later on that the police And that, later on, I mean like a day or two later, the police discovered that Mr. Ford had pawned some items, and those items they believed had been stolen during this robbery murder, and so he was brought in again. And, you know, from the beginning, you know, within 10 days of this crime being committed, Mr. Ford had answered the police's questions, he'd cooperated, and most importantly, he had given the police some of the strongest evidence against the real perpetrators, which are these Jake and Henry Robinson. He explained that the items that he had pawned, he had received from those men. He didn't know at the time where they came from, or that he didn't recognize them as having been at the store that had been robbed, but, you know, that's where he got them from. That was some of the best evidence against the real perpetrators. And I say real perpetrators because, you know, those men were arrested at the time of the crime as well with Mr. Ford. But once they convicted Mr. Ford, the charges against the Robinson brothers were dropped and they were freed. But it's the recent evidence that's come to light that exonerated Mr. Ford. All it did was confirm what Mr. Ford had been telling the police all along and what he has been arguing for 30 years, which is that he did not commit this crime. It was the Robinson brothers. So that's how he ended up getting involved. And the explanation of, you know, why the police chose to prosecute him and not the other men, I don't know. You know, that's not a decision that I am privy to.
Okay, so he was, he was charged with first-degree murder, correct?
Yes.
And it was Isidore Roseman?
Yes, that was the victim's name. He was an older gentleman who owned an antique shop and a watch repair shop. So it was just a local business that sold some antiques, and he repaired jewelry and things like that.
And he was well respected in the area, correct?
As far as I know, I haven't heard anything either way. I assume, you know, as a small-time local business owner, that's generally somebody that's upheld in a community, yes.
Okay, now, when the police went out, I think they spoke with Glenn Ford's father first, right?
Right. Initially, the police, I believe, had an address for him, which was Mr. Ford's father's address, and the police went and spoke with him, and then Mr. Ford's father brought the police to Mr. Ford. He was he was staying at a different apartment or something at the time.
Okay, and in the report it says that Glenn Ford cooperated fully with the police.
Yeah, I mean he answered their questions. He did multiple interviews with them and gave them information as they requested it.
Okay, and someone also, I think, in the area, it was some neighborhood kids, I think, said that they saw Glenn Ford at the shop prior to the crime being committed, correct?
Right, and he had been. So he had previously worked for Mr. Roseman, I think, like, you know, kind of cutting his lawn and doing that kind of, like, handiwork. And Mr. Ford had come by his house earlier on the day that he was unfortunately murdered, and he had come by and just asked him, "Do you have any work for me?" So the neighborhood children or the next door neighbors, probably did see Mr. Ford. That isn't an issue. The timing of when they saw him may have been an issue, but he admits to having been there earlier. So that's why, you know, and that's not an unreasonable step for the police to take at all. You hear that somebody had been around there, and you start that spree begin. But the problem is they ignored a lot of evidence pointing to the real perpetrators and instead prosecuted an innocent man.
Right, because some items were pawned, but that was from the shop, right?
That's the allegation. There isn't any real direct evidence necessarily, or you know, it's not entirely clear that the items were necessarily from the store or had been stolen at the time of that of the murder. There's some items that were proven that were actually at the store, but it was never proven how those items actually left the store. But of course, the presumption of the police and the prosecution and their argument was that they had been stolen during the robbery and murder.
Okay, so he was convicted, sentenced to death by an all-white jury.
Yes. Mr. Ford is an African American man.
Exactly. And so he gets a death sentence over his head. He's in prison for, what, 30-plus years. You all get involved, and he gets out. And I'm reading a statement that he made, I think, when he was first released from Angola. He said that my kids were babies mm-hmm. when I was hauled off to prison, and those kids now have their own babies.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. you know, and that was kind of sad. And then as he was leaving Angola, Wattenborough King would have the audacity to apologize for the state getting it wrong, and it gives him $20, and that's it, right?
Yeah, and I think that $20 amount is just what the standard amount is when somebody leaves prison. I think in theory that's to provide money for like a bus ticket or something if you don't have someone to pick you up from the gates of Angola. One thing I do want to clarify just to make sure it's clear to your listeners, and I don't want to be taking credit for something that we didn't do. Our office did not play any part in representing Mr. Ford during post-conviction while he was in jail. That was all done by the Capital Post-Conviction Project of Louisiana. So I don't want to take credit for things that I did not do. There was
right.
many, many years and years and years of litigation by other lawyers for Mr. Ford. I only came in, you know, in the past 6 months or so to represent him on the compensation claim.
Okay, so Louisiana does have a compensation law where it pays inmates when they've been wrongfully convicted, right?
Yes.
Okay, so how much does an inmate get?
An exoneree is entitled to $25,000 per year of wrongful incarceration, but that is capped at $250,000. So that means essentially it's a 10-year cap. Off the top of my head, I can think of three exonerees that spent less than 10 years in prison. The vast, vast majority spent significantly more than 10 years in prison. Mr. Ford spent three times that amount in prison. That is, there's a problem there. So this is, you know, in the scheme of things, this is not a lot of money. So they're entitled to $25,000 per year. And then there's another little pot of money of $80,000 that is supposed to be, they call for loss of life opportunities, which is a little vague. But really what it's set aside for is if someone who is exonerated has, you know, medical expenses or has job skills training they would like to participate in or would like to attend college or do a GED or something like that, they can use some of those funds for those purposes. They're limited and they're in time and in what it can be used for, and it's set up now as kind of a reimbursement scheme. It is not very efficient, but that money is there, so I always fight to get my clients as much of that money as possible, and I continue to represent them even after the initial compensation judgment is signed to represent them to get more money for these other expenses that they may incur later.
Okay, and you have already filed papers concerning the compensation, correct?
For Mr. Ford, yes. I filed in December. And we had a hearing in the district court in early February, and now that we're just waiting for the judge to rule.
Okay, and I don't know, I guess it may have been the DA, someone said that he doesn't qualify, he doesn't meet the necessary requirements to be compensated because his hands were not completely clean. What does that mean?
Well, it is the Attorney General's office that represents the state in these cases, so it's the position of the Attorney General's office officially. Their argument is that because he pawned these items that they say came from this robbery murder, which hasn't been proven, by the way, but they that's their allegation, that if because he pawned these things and therefore he possessed them, that he is he's not actually innocent. He's not factually innocent under the definition of the statute, and so he's therefore not entitled to compensation. But beyond that, I know the details of their of their argument or any of the motivation behind why they're taking this stance and making this argument when there are other exonerees who were similarly situated where they also possessed items. You know, John Thompson is a death row exoneree who admits to having been a fence at the time, and he possessed items that were associated with a robbery and murder, and yet he was not only received compensation, but the state didn't even oppose his compensation. You know, there are other exonerees who have possessed items that were connected to the larger crime. That's the reason, you know, in many cases they became suspects in the first place, and in these other cases the state didn't even oppose compensation, and they were granted compensation. So I don't know the motivation behind the state's opposition in Mr. Ford's case.
Okay. Now, I don't want to sound ugly here, but I'm wondering if the state is trying to prolong this as long as possible, because I think, was it earlier this year, Glenn Ford was diagnosed with lung cancer?
Yes, yes. He has, I think at this point, I'm not a doctor, but the latest I've heard is that he has stage 4 lung cancer, I think cancer of the lymph nodes. He has limited life expectancy at this point.
And so when I was reading in the paper, I think when they diagnosed him, he was given 4 to 8 months to live.
I feel like that life expectancy, that sort of time frame, right, has changed over. Even over the 6 months that I've represented him, I don't know what that number is, and I don't even know how much what that really means. I do know it's very limited, though. So, you know, from talking with Glenn, and I think he's told other reporters that, you know, his goal is to just enjoy the time he has left, spend time with his family, his sons, his grandchildren, and just, you know, do what he can with the little amount of time he has, you know, with freedom.
Okay, so how is Glenn holding up these days?
He has he's a very gentle and thoughtful man, and he's very, I don't want to speak for him, but you know, his grace and his ability to make it through this is incredibly impressive. That's an understatement. I don't know how he has gone through all this for so long, and now also to be diagnosed. He's just handling it with, I think, the most, you know, grace and just strength that a person can, you know. I know he's sad. I know that this is a level of disappointment or sadness that I don't think really anyone else in the world can really imagine. He spent so long in prison for a crime he didn't commit under such awful conditions while even in prison. You know, prison, when you're on death row, those conditions are substantially different than those in the general population. And I don't mean in any way to suggest that being in a general population at prison is enjoyable or not that bad. Absolutely not. But he was in solitary confinement. He was, you know, in a cell for 23 hours a day. He was very limited in any activities he could participate in. So he's had a very, very hard go of it. And to maintain his sanity through that is impressive is the word I'm thinking of, and it's completely an understatement, and I'm not thinking of the right word. Miraculous? Right. I don't know, maybe.
But you give a man, sentence a man to death, and he do 30-plus years, and he's exonerated, he comes out, and the state of Louisiana has already inflicted one injustice against him. And refusing to compensate him, to me, would be another injustice, don't you think?
Absolutely, absolutely. To me, this is one of the clearest cases, I feel like, of somebody being entitled to compensation.
Right.
There are cases where, you know, lawyers and that defendants, they fight their case and they win, and they make their arguments in court and they win. And there are even a couple, some cases that we've had where the state has joined us. They've finally seen the evidence, whether it's DNA evidence or other evidence, and they say, oh my gosh, something really went wrong, and they join in the motion. In Mr. Ford's case, it was the state's motion alone. Now, he'd been fighting his conviction for years and years and years, but it was the state's motion. It was the state's motion that actually had his conviction overturned. It was the state that argued to the court, he's innocent and his conviction should be overturned. Charges against him should be dismissed. He should be, he should be released from prison. And then to turn around, and when you say, okay, well, now he's entitled to this little bit of money to help him make this transition from imprisonment to freedom, to help get himself started in some sort of a life, and then to say, no, you're not entitled to it is surprising, disappointing.
Right.
I don't think it's what the citizens of Louisiana would expect. And the Attorney General's office represents the citizens of Louisiana, and I just, no one's taken a vote, but I really feel strongly that this is not what the citizens of Louisiana want from the attorneys that represent them.
And
I know I
don't,
as a citizen of Louisiana.
Exactly, but you would think after, the state argues their case, to set him free there, for him to be compensated should be extremely easy now.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, they could have,
right.
They could have granted that compensation at that same hearing. There was nothing stopping them from it. That could have all been wrapped up right then.
Mm-hmm. Because we had one lady that implicated him as being the killer, later did a statement. It was videotaped, and she said she lied, correct?
There was a person who testified against him at trial who
mm-hmm.
said essentially that he confessed and was sort of around the real perpetrators and things like that. But then...
Right.
During his trial, it wasn't later on, during his trial, that woman ended up testifying for the defense and said, everything I testified to on direct was a lie. It was during the trial.
Right, and she gave that statement, I think, twice, once in, April and maybe in July or something?
I'm not sure. This was during the trial, so she was a witness for both sides, and I don't know these other statements. There's evidence that came up recently. I don't know if that's what you're referring to, that the evidence that the state is relying on to show that Mr. Ford is innocent,
right.
A new witness came forward and provided information that the state felt was sufficient to prove his innocence.
Well, I think, I think a lot of laws need to be changed. I think the state need to be police, so to say, to make sure that, they're doing everything by the books rather than just railroading people into prison, because it's easy to get them in there, but sometimes, it's extremely hard to get them out of there.
It is. I mean, once you've been convicted of a crime, the whole burden switches to you to prove your innocence, and it's
right.
incredibly difficult. And to prove the presumption is, once you have a conviction, the presumption is all of that evidence that came in at trial is true, and that's not the case, And people's mindset changes too. I mean, once someone's been convicted of something, everyone just assumes, well, he must have done it,
he
must have done something.
That's it. And it is still some people to this day will go to their grave saying he did it.
Probably. I don't know. I hope not. I hope not. But
right.
But I think in general, as a general matter, yes, there is a mindset that once someone has been convicted of a crime that is it, and that it should be final, and there shouldn't be an opportunity to really prove your innocence elsewhere.
All right. Kristen, before we go off air, mm-hmm. I applaud you for what you're doing. I've looked at a lot of the cases that you're on. You do great work, and we thank you for that. We have shared all of your links on our Injustice Overruled Foundation page, and anything that we can do to help in this matter. Even if you have to come back on air, we would be more than happy to do that, to bring awareness to this, because Glenn Ford has suffered one injustice, and he shouldn't have to suffer another injustice by the state of Louisiana, because they messed up and they got it wrong. And even the young lady that did her video statement, I read, well, she said the police, and I know you weren't in this part of it, but the police encouraged her to lie. And the individual that they was first looking at is the one that really committed the crime.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep. And stuff. So,
but you're very welcome, and you know, it is my and our office's pleasure to do this work and to represent Mr. Ford. It really is it's an honor to be able to help him. And I will say, and I don't know if you've shared this link on your website, but there is a website set up to help Mr. Ford. Sister Helen Prejean, the sort of longtime anti-death penalty activist, she has, and her organization, she's put up a link, and you can make, if any of your listeners want to do what they can, and make a little donation for Mr. Ford to help him. Because when he walked out of prison, to be clear, he had absolutely nothing. He had the clothes on his back, which were the clothes that the prison issued him. And the only reason that he's not homeless right now is because another death row exoneree, John Thompson, has created an organization and has put a roof over his head. But, you know, the man has nothing, and the state, you know, has provided him with nothing. So every little bit, and, you know, then I mean, this money's going to, you know, feed him, clothe him, very basic, very basic, pay bills. If your listeners would like to do it, you know, something and help, and would like to do that in a monetary fashion, there is a website through which they can make a donation to Mr. Ford. It goes directly to Mr. Ford.
Okay, if you will send us that link as soon as you can, we will be more than happy to share it. And I didn't know that. I was under the impression that he was living with family members. I didn't know that he had nowhere to go.
No. Nope. Okay. Yeah, he walked out of prison to his lawyers and then came down to New Orleans because, you know, John Thompson's organization, Resurrection After Exoneration, you know, offered him a roof, you know, over his head. Yeah.
Kirsten, again, I thank you so much, and I look forward to having you back on the show to discuss some of your other cases. But again, if you get us that link, we will add it to our page.
Wonderful.
And you and the Innocent Project continue to do what you do, and give our best to Glenn Ford.
I certainly will. Thank you for spreading the word about this case and other injustices.
You are more than welcome. You have been listening to The Story Within the Story with Alfonso Scott. Be it the Lord willing and the creek don't rise, we will do it again tomorrow at 1 p.m. Remember, I am not always right, and you are not always wrong. We'll see you on the radio.